looking for an apartment sucks wherever you live. People in New York will say, oh, it's so hard to find an apartment here. It's hard to find an apartment anywhere. It stinks. You have your mandatories. You have the things that you won't compromise on. You have the things that you don't care about. Like, let's say, oh, dishwasher. I need a dishwasher. I need a dishwasher. I can't live without a dishwasher. I don't care if I don't have a washer and dryer. Some people feel the exact opposite. Some people don't need any amenities. Some people need an elevator. Some people don't.
That's so beautiful. We all need different things. And that's why Apartments.com has an app where you can literally use it to tell it what you need and what you don't need. And it tells you, oh, apartments. Here's some.
So instead of looking through every single rental listing you possibly can in the neighborhoods you want, you set and forget, like in that old rotisserie grill ad, you set and forget what you want, and Apartments.com will let you know when an apartment that matches what you want appears on the market.
From pet-friendly apartments to balconies to in-unit ACs, Apartments.com's powerful search tools let you know when the perfect combination of features you're seeking are listed. So you don't have to power through rental descriptions one by one. With more rental listings than anywhere else, Apartments.com's instant alerts mean you can spend less time online looking for the perfect place and more time doing you.
Apartments.com, the place to find a place.
You or Jayla? Yeah.
They want to know. To be famous.
Welcome to Who Weekly, the podcast where you'll learn everything you need to know about the celebrities you don't. I'm Bobby Finger.
I'm Lindsay Weber.
And did you see who the moth is on The Masked Dancer? Yes, we're not talking about The Masked Singer. We're talking about The Masked Dancer, which is the dangerous version of The Masked Singer.
The Masked Dancer is literally The Masked Singer, but they dance, which like is even weirder because how do you recognize somebody's dancing if they're not even a dancer? Like a singer, you can hear their voice and you can maybe put together some clues, but a dancer, if you didn't know how I danced, how would you know how I danced? Do you know what I mean?
And especially in this instance where the moth openly said, I don't dance.
Right.
Like, this isn't what I do.
Well, that's why the people who sing are like, I don't sing. So oftentimes they sound like they're speaking voices, which just makes it easy. Anyways, there are clues.
Yeah.
Apparently, Brian Austin Green, of all people, is the person who guessed correctly who the moth was on The Masked Dancer. And we're going to reveal it to you in a clip. Let's play the clip here. Sing it out!
Elizabeth Smart! Activist, speaker, and best-selling author.
My God!
Elizabeth Smart.
Elizabeth Smart. Elizabeth Smart.
Elizabeth Smart!
More people cared about the news of this reveal than the show itself in a way. Like, I didn't know.
Totally.
I wasn't paying attention to The Masked Dancer. But anyways, I guess Bill Nye was also on it. He was unmasked.
Boring. I'm asleep. I'm bored.
But this is crazy to me because what it reveals when she got interviewed is that they called her. Not that she would have called them, because I don't know how Elizabeth Smart would have thought I should be on this show, The Masked Dancer, that doesn't even exist yet. But to me, what's crazy about this is how good the casting is. Like, who are these producers who thought to call Elizabeth Smart?
Elizabeth Smart. They called her home phone. She says she was talking to Entertainment Weekly about this.
Genius.
Because this is the thing. When I first heard about this, I was like, that's dark. That's like fucked up. This is weird. This is 2021 in a nutshell. Like, why? What? Why would she agree to this? And then you read this interview with her in Entertainment Weekly, and I teared up. It makes perfect sense, but this little nugget of a revelation of how they do it, they literally called her home phone number, and because she lives in Utah and Julianne Hough's parents live in Utah, she was like, oh, they meant to
how
get
is
Julianne,
Julianne Hough the most famous person in Utah? Is that what, is that the reveal of this? Is that literally she is?
I think the reveal is that this probably has happened before.
Oh.
I feel like she's insinuating that she has once been reached out to when they meant to call Julianne Hough.
Crazy.
So they call her. They're like, do you want to be on The Masked Dancer? And her response is essentially, why the fuck would I ever want to be on The Masked Dancer? I don't dance. My entire thing is talking about abuse, sexual violence, and rape, and like kidnapping.
Right.
And like, that's all I do. And then her grandmother died. Oh. I guess she knows she started getting very existential, and she was, and I'm just going to quote her. She says, I spent so much time working in this field that when I was sitting there thinking about it at my grandmother's funeral, I just thought, you know what? Why not? Life is already hard enough. I mean, not to mention 2020. I don't think anyone would want to come back and say, oh yeah, 2020, best year of my life. Or there would be very few people who would say that. And I just thought, this has already been a hard year, so why not do something fun? So I guess for me, more than anyone else, I just wanted to do something fun. It's okay to have fun.
That's so sweet.
Of all people who deserve to have fun.
I know, literally. This girl deserves to have fun for the rest of her life nonstop, truly. Apparently, there was some clue about, like, going to the White House to advocate for, like, protection of children. And Brian Austin mm-hmm. Green guessed it off of that. Although I'm kind of like sus about, I don't know if he's smart enough to get that clue.
I don't know
clue.
How these things
but
work.
Apparently there was clues that really that led them to having her as one of the options for the reveal, because in the clip you see her face alongside a few other people who they guessed that it is, which is crazy because I can't even mm-hmm. imagine guessing. I guess you guess purely based off the clues.
I'm not good at this game, but I told you I had a feeling about this.
Yes, you did. When we did the Dancing with the Stars casting rubric thing, I feel like Masked Singer and Masked Dancer are like basically the same idea, but a little bit more deranged, you know, like having somebody pulled from the headlines is truly one of the goals of these shows. Those are types of people that they seek out too. I think this is a mm-hmm. way more inspiring person than
like Carol Baskin.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Clearly they're going for a more like inspiring vibe here on the Masked Singer, Masked Dancer.
Being the producer who made this call,
genius.
This like Hail Mary of a call, like she's gonna say no, but let's just try it. Yeah. And then she says yes, ultimately. I mean, it sounds like there was a pretty extensive amount of time between the call and the agreement, but still.
And watching Ashley Tisdale and Brian Austin Green and the rest of the Masked Dancer hosts watch Elizabeth Smart be unmasked on the Masked Dancer on Fox or whatever was probably like one of the weirdest moments if you were witnessing it live. You know, just like truly out of body experience.
I forgot to mention the Ashley Tisdale thing. Did you read about the Ashley Tisdale connection?
No, they don't have a connection.
They have a strange connection.
What is
and
it?
The connection is Elizabeth Smart was like, oh, and I thought it was interesting that Ashley Tisdale was there because I've been a fan of hers for so long because High School Musical was set at my high school.
Oh my God, weird. Oh, that's so weird. Oh, that's so weird.
Apparently they filmed it at Elizabeth Smart's high school, sure. Which is dark in its own way.
I know. For me, the most affecting Masked Singer, Masked Dancer moment will always be the night that Tom Hanks got coronavirus or announced that he got coronavirus
and Sarah Palin
got unmasked on The Masked Singer all in one night. And it was literally March of last year. So think about all of those things coming together. And I was not in my own town. I was in Los Angeles. And I was like, I got to get out of here.
I got to get out of here. Okay, we got to move on to the show. You are listening to Who's There, a weekly call-in show where we take your questions, comments, and concerns at 619-WHO-THEM. I'm trying to get better at enunciating. Sometimes lately in my editing, I've been noticing I'm like a little like marbly mouth. So I'm trying to go on to comments. Here is a call about Lady Gaga.
Here is a call about Lady Gaga.
Hi, Lindsay and Bobby. I'm calling about the Lady Gaga people can do hard things weird soundbite. So as you might remember, Glennon Milton Doyle, or I guess just Glennon Doyle now, had her famous book Untamed come out this past year. And she has this quote that she uses throughout it called, "We can do hard things." So it seems to me like Lady Gaga is ripping off the Glennon Doyle quote, which is kind of weird. Okay, Leanne Cuisine, bye.
Lindsay goes, is "People Can Do Hard Things" in Chromatica? It's not a lyric in Chromatica, but it was definitely on some of the merch and the promo. "People Can Do Hard Things" in that weird font.
But it is a ripoff from Glennon Doyle. Because it's been in a few of her books. Because I found on some like book quoting site, "These things will be hard to do, but you can do hard things." And all of her merch or people's merch dedicated to Glennon has the hard things kind of on it.
"You can do hard things. We can do hard things." Lady Gaga decided to make it "People Can Do Hard Things." She's gotta know. And the reason she's gotta know is because Glennon Doyle has retweeted Lady Gaga, and Lady Gaga said, "There is still a shortage of poll workers in almost every state." This is in October of 2020. And she's telling people how they can work at elections at workelections.com. Glennon quote tweets this and says, "Thank you, Lady Gaga. We can do hard things."
Did you hear that Gaga singing the national anthem of Chromatica at the inauguration?
I did. I heard that. She's singing Alice at the inauguration.
People think she's singing Ours, but she's actually singing Chromatica's. Can you imagine if they like, she's like, "Ahem, my name is..."
God, I love Alice.
"To honor America and perform our national anthem, please welcome Academy Award nominee and 6-time Grammy winner, Lady Gaga."
"My name is Dallas, but I'm keeping..." bless you, America.
When I was searching for instances of people can do hard things, whatever, you can do hard things, I found Jennifer Nettles, that singer from Sugarland, the country band, who has a solo career as well. She has a song called I Can Do Hard Things.
Right.
She explained that it was like, it's a direct ripoff of Glennon. Like, she like references Glennon when she writes about the songwriting process.
Yeah.
Gaga, as far as I've seen, has not directly called her out.
So Gaga needs to say, thank you, Glennon, for letting me use your quote in my cookie marketing. So we're waiting for that.
Yes.
Okay.
My generous interpretation of this is that Gaga thinks that this is like a them phrase. Like, everyone knows that it's Glennon. I don't even have to cite it.
People can do hard things.
Next call.
Hi, the weekly, long time. Sorry, I kind of went crazy in the previous call. I was calling about the call about Aaliyah. And Aaliyah, I'm a Gen Z also. And like, a lot of my cousins are named Aaliyah. And my friends are named Aaliyah. And I think Aaliyah is like well-known Black them. But I think maybe like in white culture, she's not of them. Two Gen Zers. Yeah, everybody knows about Aaliyah. We know about R. Kelly, the whole entire drama with her family, grew up on it, family makes sure. Like, we know the history of Aaliyah. So she's, like, way up there in Ben's in Black culture. And I just thought I would call about that. Cringe, cringe.
Someone also did email us and say that Aaliyah is on Tidal. So if you have Tidal streaming, then you have Aaliyah's. Which actually is like a good enough reason to get Tidal.
Tidal was one of those services that I had for like too long and I didn't realize I was paying for it. Wow. And I was like, I've been paying for Tidal for how long? Because I thought I canceled
my
subscription.
This whole time.
Well, remember that was back when like a lot of artists were exclusive to Tidal and then they were like, we give up. But now it's like they have Aaliyah. That's amazing.
I don't know how long they've had her, but they apparently have her. You can listen to Aaliyah on Tidal and maybe on other places soon.
So following up to Black Gen Z, Aaliyah them, we have this comment about Gen Z.
Hi, Lindsay, Bobby, first time, medium time. I just had to pause the podcast because of a caller calling out Siskel and Ebert. I thought, oh, I'm in my early 20s and I know who they are. But then once you started talking about them, I realized I was thinking of the two Muppets, the two old Muppet men. So I guess they are who's crunch, crunch.
Aaliyah, Gen Z, Black them, Siskel and Ebert, Gen Z, just straight up ooze. Doesn't matter who you are.
Aaliyah, we were kind of wrong about. Siskel and Ebert, we were right about.
Can you name them, the Muppets?
Yeah, Stelter and Waldorf and Stelter.
Stelter, no. No.
Stellar and
sweetie.
Waldorf. Waldorf?
Statler.
Statler. I'm close. And Waldorf. Waller. Mm-hmm. Waldorf.
Statler and Waldorf.
Yeah, okay. I got it. Who came first, them or Siskel and Ebert? They're kind of one and the same.
They both premiered in 1975.
Really?
I doubt that there is a connection, but it is sort of funny that they both premiered in 1975.
Ugh, yeah, and then somebody asked us which one of us is Siskel and which one of us is Ebert, and that threw me for like a true loop.
I was about to do some thinking, like deep thoughts about which one of us is Siskel and which one of us is Ebert. And I kind of reject that binary. I don't think either of us are
okay,
Siskel or Ebert.
Okay, fine.
You know what?
Sure.
No.
All right, fine. Break out of the box.
We're both Roper.
We're both flops. It's true.
Hey, Bobby Lindsay. Long time. I had to pause the podcast today when you were talking about Eva Amari Martino's boyfriend post to point out two hilarious follow-up items. First, in the post, she was super cagey about when she was going to post photos, like it's going to be a while. And literally 2 days later, she was posting selfies with him on her Instagram story. So that didn't take long. And two, there's apparently another chef also named Ian Hawk. So there was a lot of confusion. And she actually addressed it in her newsletter, talking about how many people sent her congratulatory posts with photos of the other guy in them. Sadly, the other one is much cuter than her boyfriend, but the tracks. Anyway, crunch, crunch, me inside.
Obsessed with this story. She can barely keep a secret. She's like, I have a secret boyfriend. I'm going to keep his privacy. I'm going to blog about him on my website. And then I'm going to have to correct people because they're posting, when they're writing this stuff on the internet, they're putting the wrong picture. So I'm going to have to then post a picture with him, therefore negating all that I spoke about regarding his privacy. A legend. Mm-hmm. A legend.
I would expect nothing less from Eva Amari.
Also, let's take a guess as to how long these people have been dating. I'm saying 2 to 3 months.
That sounds right. She can't keep a secret.
She cannot.
She's got a compulsion. She needs to share.
She needs to post.
She has to share.
Has to post.
I'm looking at her stories right now. So there's a photo of a cup of coffee that says, come to mama, who can't relate. Mm-hmm. And then last night, she posted stories of herself using the Instagram pan. She got the Instagram pan. She's using the pan. It doesn't look like Spawn either. I think she's just casually using the Instagram pan.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Guess what color she got?
Pink.
She chose millennial pink for the Instagram pan.
I bet it doesn't stay millennial pink very long. Just saying, it wouldn't in my household. I'm bad at dishes is what I'm saying.
I recently bought some steel wool.
Yeah.
And like, steel wool is the fucking best. It cleans everything.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I was just steel wooling the shit out of all my pants.
Yeah. There's nothing that is a substitute for steel wool. Like, you can't. No. Yeah, it's true.
Hey, what's Francia Rexa up to? She's on Grown-ish playing a conservative Cuban. I think this is their senior year. Yeah, senior in college. Crunch, crunch. Lean and cuisine.
Bobby was being a little bit rude and
it was a little bit rude.
Rude and crude. Just kidding, not just rude. DeFrancia, who has been on Grown-ish. I think Grown-ish is only on its second season, though. So I think she was on the second season of Grown-ish. I did watch the first season, just not the second.
She's Ana Torres on Grown-ish, which, look, happy to talk about Francia's career. The thing is, I'm dying to know what fucking happened between her and Selena.
Well, if you search her name, it's the number one thing that comes up. What happened with her and
what happened Selena. Between Selena and Francia?
I want to know. I want to know so badly.
I gotta know.
Did you know that when Constance Wu threw that little hissy fit on Twitter about Fresh Off Coke
getting her show getting her renewed, where she was like, damn it.
Do you know that? Francia wrote an open letter to her on Twitter that was like, what the fuck?
I didn't even forget that. I didn't know that that happened.
I didn't know that that happened
because you were
either.
Like, did you remember this? And I was like, I don't remember this. I have no memory of this.
She said, this is such a good one.
It's a good
She's
statement.
She's like, I believe you when you say you appreciate Fresh Off the Boat and Fresh Off the Boat afforded you the opportunity to have others. You are living every actor's dream. I mean it when I say congratulations. And then it's like, blah, 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 blah. And then she said, losing that job is unfortunate, but it's probably going to go to someone who needed it. It's allowing the opportunity for someone else to shine along with you. This means the door is opening wider because like she was basically the reasoning was that she lost another job because she had to take Fresh Off the Boat getting renewed job essentially.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very thoughtful note but I just didn't know that she had written an open note to Constance Wu after that incident
that got 32 retweets.
I know it was low. I kind of want to give it an RT. I know we're late, but anyways, maybe I'll give it an RT.
Hi, Who Weekly. Medium-time listener, first-time caller. I just had to call in about Stassi from Vanderpump Rules naming her daughter Hartford Charlie Rose Clark, which is a lot. And I'm not going to really touch the Charlie Rose part of that, but I did want to call in as someone who was born and raised in the suburbs of Hartford. I choose to believe that she decided to name her daughter after Our Fair City. I think it's entirely appropriate that someone like a Who from Vanderpump Rules would name her daughter after one of the Whoiest cities in America. So with that in mind, I just wanted to share a few fun Hartford facts that you might like. At one point, Hartford's tourism slogan was Hartford, New England's rising star, which kind of reeks of desperation. Second, the highway interchange on the cover of the Radiohead album, OK Computer. Someone on Reddit figured out a few years ago that that highway interchange was in downtown Hartford, which I think is pretty cool. We'll take all the press we can get. And lastly, Hartford has a minor league baseball team called the Yard Goats. Don't know where that name came from, but the stadium that they do play in is called Dunkin' Donuts Park. Thought you'd like to know that. All right. Crunch, crunch. Me and Hartford.
I love like a
great call.
Like it was like a mix of like defensive, but also I know I'm ridiculous. Amazing. Just great. I love it. Makes me want to go to Hartford. Kind of.
Why not?
A little bit.
I kind of want to have a little weekend holiday whenever restrictions
the
have been loosened.
Shining
when
star,
we're all back.
New England's rising star. Still rising, I think.
International travel who? Just take a train up to Hartford. Have a weekend. Does Boston have any funny, like, minor league teams?
You're asking, Lou.
San Antonio
does. Who are you asking?
Minor, because they were talking, the caller was talking about what Hartford's, like, minor league teams.
Well, you remember,
funny.
Okay, the only thing I do know is you remember the movie starring Jessica Biel and Freddie Prinze Jr., like, Summer Catch? I think that was based on a Cape Cod minor league baseball team. Or some sort of minor league baseball team that was in the Massachusetts area.
I mean, I know that it's sort of part of the gag. It's just funny to me that Hartford's are the yard goats. And it's like their logo. I'm looking at it now. It's like a demonic looking goat just like gnawing on a stick. And they play at Dunkin' Donuts Park. Everything about minor league baseball teams is hilarious. The San Antonio one is called the San Antonio Missions. And their mascot is a puffy taco from our famous puffy taco place.
Puffy taco.
It's amazing.
A puffy taco?
Puffy tacos are amazing. They're a San Antonio creation. Okay, let's move on to questions. Mothers. Mother's Day. It's American Mother's Day coming up. I know the UK has their own Mother's Day in March, but our Mother's Day is coming
and
up.
And we don't just celebrate, you know, biological mothers. We celebrate, you know, people who you could consider mother and those who are mother figures to you. Could be anyone.
If there's a mother in your life who you want to celebrate on Mother's Day, get them StoryWorth. My parents printed out extra keepsake books for them. So now I have one of their keepsake books in my coffee table.
Oh, I love
of
that.
Their stories, which were, I mean, they were meant for my nephews, but works for me. I like having those stories.
You can read
everyone
those stories.
Loves these stories.
Any
the
good stories in there?
Not that I'm willing to share.
Oh.
Well, you know what? Here's a fascinating story. I found out, I don't want to reveal what it was, but I found out what my mom originally wanted to do when she grew up.
Which was what?
She wanted to be a flight attendant.
Oh, wow.
It didn't work out. Didn't work out. We love StoryWorth. It helps you preserve precious memories and stories from your mom, mother figure, ma, mother.
Capital M,
all
mother.
All mothers. For years to come. Every week, StoryWorth emails your loved one a thought-provoking question that you get to help pick. You can write the questions. You can choose pre-written questions. It's really as much you or your mother are willing to put in. StoryWorth makes it all a breeze. They just need to respond to that email, long or short. Doesn't matter how verbose your mother is. You get a copy of those responses as they're submitted. And then at the end of the year, StoryWorth compiles all of those stories and photos into a beautiful keepsake hardcover book that you can share and revisit for generations to come. You can print a copy for yourself. You can print a copy for the grandkids. You can print a copy for your friends. Print as many copies as you want. Families love StoryWorth. That's why it has more than 25,000 five-star reviews on Trustpilot, with millions of stories preserved since they were founded over a decade ago. So give all the mothers in your life a unique, heartfelt gift that you'll cherish for years. StoryWorth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/who. That's storyworth.com/who to save $10 on your first purchase.
Hi, The Weekly. Would you guys be able to figure out any information about Riz Ahmed's wife? Apparently, he got married but has not revealed his wife's name or really anything about her. It doesn't seem likely, to be honest, but I don't know. Maybe you guys have some sources that can give us more information. Thanks. Bye.
Riz Ahmed, probably best known for Star Wars, but to me, best known for The Night Of, that series he did, as well as being the guy at the end of Girls who knocks up Lena Dunham.
Gets Lena pregnant. Yeah, where you're like, why is this subplot happening? And then you're like, oh, that's why this subplot is happening.
But he also is the star of the movie that came out this year that is my favorite film of the year, which is The Sound of Metal, which I have talked about before. And he's doing promo for that film, which is currently on Amazon. And I cannot recommend it enough. It's incredible. He's also a rapper. Like, he also does music. And he also he's one of those, like, everyman that I think confuses people. Somebody that we would also be confused by. It's like, all right.
Because I do everything well, but I'm not super famous in any of my categories.
I do think that that means that he just kind of does whatever the fuck he wants, you know, at his own pace.
Well, usually a super famous celebrity who has a music career, the music career is sort of laughed at. I mean, I immediately yes. think of like Dennis Quaid's embarrassing band and like Bruce Willis's embarrassing band.
But even if they're good, it's still kind of laughed at sometimes. But I also think that it's like he was one of those guys that was like, he's a superstar. He's going to go quick up to the top. And then it like he's like taking his time kind of longer than maybe the traditional route or whatever. But then there's also the whole thing like he's British Pakistani. There's a lot that comes along with that. You know, like he probably has to avoid taking roles that are like be a terrorist, you know,
which is his whole thing.
He has literally like a
it's like the Bechdel test but for Muslim representation.
They call it the Riz test. Some a doctor invented the Riz test, which was five criteria that is like if the film stars at least one character who is identifiably Muslim by ethnicity, language, or clothing, is the character. And it was like, are they talking about terrorism? Do they are they presented as angry? Are they presented as superstitious? Are they presented as a threat? Is if the character is a man, is he misogynist? So these were these five things that like basically this is the Muslim version of the Bechdel test.
Mm-hmm. And so he got married. The main thing is he's doing promo for Lindsay's favorite movie of the year, Sound of Metal, where he plays a deaf drummer or a drummer who's going deaf.
Yes, a drummer who's losing his hearing. And because he's doing this press and he just got married and it was kind of low key, that's coming up. And I think what's kind of funny is he didn't mean to say that he was getting married. He was on Louis Theroux's podcast. And
the clip is funny.
I think the clip implies, which we can play, that he said it to him off mic. And then Louis, who's a little sneaky, and this is one of his things, he kind of says, oh, you mentioned you just got married.
And then Riz is like, oh, we're doing this? Well, you just broke huge news. Like, he's very self-aware of the fact that he's not a huge celebrity, exactly. But he's like, oh, this is going to be a thing. Cool. Congrats to you.
How long have you been married?
Not very long, actually. I think it's the first time I've ever mentioned it in an interview. So congratulations on this incredibly exciting scoop. But yeah, I mean, I guess I don't really feel it's generally that relevant. So I don't really kind of delve into my personal life.
Then we have like Us Weekly, whose headline literally is Riz Ahmed reveals he secretly got married but won't disclose his wife's name, : it's not that relevant. But what's funny is clearly they think it's relevant that it's not relevant. Or maybe it wasn't, maybe it wouldn't be relevant if he did reveal it, but it is relevant that it's not relevant, that he said it wasn't relevant. And then, of course, after this caller called, after that podcast, I think last night, Riz was on The Tonight Show, and he goes on The Tonight Show, and Jimmy Fallon is like, congratulations, you just got married. Who is it? And he's like, okay, well, I guess it's a thing now. This is my wife. Here's how we met. Here's the clip.
Yeah, well, her name's Fatima Farheen Mirza. She's an amazing novelist. And we met so randomly while actually I was preparing for this role for Sound of Metal when I was in New York. We just both sat down at the same table in a cafe where we both turned up to write. We were both like jostling over the same laptop plug points, like a very modern way of meeting. And we struck up a friendship and then we reconnected down the line.
Riz is a prestige who I still don't think he's a them, but like he's extremely well liked. He's sort of still that guy. Also because he's played so many characters, I still kind of think of him as a character actor, kind of. Although I guess Sound of Metal may change my mind because he's like the leading man.
You have to watch. Have you seen it yet?
I know. I have to watch it.
Fuck, you have to see it. It's so good.
I know. I'm so behind.
It's so good. But they're, how they met is so cute. It's like the New York meet cute story of like everyone's fantasies.
This could happen anywhere. My dream. Anywhere but the coffee shop.
My dream. I miss coffee shops for this reason, because every day you go to a coffee shop to sit down and read a book, this could be you.
It's weird that I've only seen this once. I've seen it in an airport multiple times, but I've only seen it in a coffee shop once, where someone literally bought a power strip because they were like, I'm not fighting for these things. I'm going to bring a power strip and plug it in. And then it's really nice. Yeah. But I mean, it's also incredibly selfish, but I mean, it helps people.
No, well,
it's like, we're not going to fight
like
here.
The coffee shop that I used to work at a lot, they had power strips that they had bought, obviously,
Kolache?
For this reason.
Oh, Kolache had power strips coming out the
not
ass.
Not Kolache, but I did work at Kolache. I'm talking about the recently deceased Outpost.
Oh.
Fine. They'll probably come back. That place is zoned for a coffee shop. Someone else will open it as a coffee shop. Okay.
Okay. Back to Riz's wife, Fatima, and this book, A Place for Us. This is a notable book because it is them adjacent. Let me tell you why. Do you know why this book is important?
No.
because it was the first book on Sarah Jessica Parker's imprint.
Oh my God, the connection.
Yeah.
Wow. I bet it's like, and I don't know how the business works, but I bet it's like she has an imprint that she helps curate and then has a responsibility for a certain amount of promotion of the books on that imprint or something. And that's kind of like
that's
why
what
it's
seems
special.
Like.
Yeah.
We actually have a list of her responsibilities on this, like, Penguin, what is essentially a press release. It says, Ms. Parker will be involved in every aspect of the publication of books issued by SJP for Hogarth, from their selection and acquisition to cover design and promotion, working in close partnership with this SVP.
That's
whatever.
Great.
So she does it all. And she chose Riz's wife.
That's very on brand for her.
And to think Riz said his wife isn't relevant. Come on, she's very relevant.
I love it.
Hi, Who Weekly, short time, first time. I am a new Black hooligan, so this is for all of my Black African diaspora babies. I am calling about Omar Sy. He is a Black French actor and the star of the new Netflix show Lupin. And he's gorgeous, he's talented, definitely a French femme, an American who. So I am calling about just to hear more about him because he deserves, and that is all. Crunch, crunch.
So I watched a couple episodes of the show because Netflix served it to me, and I was like, okay, like, I recognize it. Oh, this is the guy from Intouchables.
Like, you watched it before the call, or you heard the call and you were like, I'm going to go check this
show. I watched it before the call, but I was like, oh yeah, this is good. I'm glad I started this because it's sort of, it's number one on Netflix, whatever, but Lupin. What is it number one on Netflix? Like, so then you Google it and you realize I'm being completely played. Not only is it number one on Netflix, it's number one on Netflix in the world.
Really?
It's cool that it's the show that everyone is watching suddenly, like Bridgerton or like The Queen's Gambit or something. But when you realize you are being played, that you are a victim to the algorithm, there's something about it that like kind of fucks with you. You're like, oh my God, I was literally being manipulated.
But I'd rather be played and being fed a show that is literally being watched worldwide than a show that's being watched by like America. You know, it's like a show that has no like greater impact. It's like if it's a show that's like, this is the number one show in France, this is the number one show in Senegal, I'm like, oh cool, like I feel like I'm actually receiving the benefits of streaming TV, which is that I should be able to access content from all over the fucking place whenever I want. Yeah.
And that's what's going on with the show. And I think that he is, especially as a counter to the Bridgerton thing, when we were like, we don't know if these people are going to break out, I feel like this is the instance where breaking out in a different way, by which I mean internationally, is more plausible and cooler, because like the caller said, Omar Sy is a French them. He was like the first Black actor to win a César, which is the French version of the Oscars, for that movie Intouchables, the highest grossing French movie of all time. They remade it in America a couple of years after that with Kevin Hart and Bryan Cranston.
And it wasn't
a flop, but it wasn't the same thing. And also, it was one of those movies that they made and then they shelved it for years and then finally it came out and it was like, okay, I guess this is good.
It was a duo comedy, kind of an action duo comedy, right?
Well, it's not an action duo, it's a heart tugging one.
Oh,
so
okay.
Like,
I thought they were action.
It's like a rich white guy is a quadriplegic and then Omar Sy is this Black man who is not rich and he helps him learn to love his life, right? Where it's like there's something about this narrative that's annoying.
So this worked in France and then it didn't really work here with the different actors.
Didn't really work here. But the Kevin Hart connection makes sense because Kevin Hart obviously is a comedian, famous person. Omar was a comedian first. He was known as a funny person. That's how he became famous. Also, he has a very distinctive voice.
Will you play
some? He's done a lot of voice acting. I'll play some. Honestly, when you look through his IMDb, it seems like he makes most of his money doing voice stuff because we know how lucrative that is. Like, he is the lead in the French dub of Soul, the Pixar movie Soul.
J'ai rien à faire ici, moi. C'était parti pour être le plus beau jour de ma vie.
Balance ce soir à 19h et premier set à 21h.
Yes! Woohoo! Je suis engagé!
So he started with radio, then he moves on to television comedy, then he starts doing voices, which he still does, then he wins the French Oscar for being in a dramedy, and now he's basically doing everything.
Is Lupin funny? No.
Well, it's charming. Okay. I'll get into Lupin in a second, but Intouchables has a special place in my heart because that's the first time I ever left the country. I went to France, the first place I ever went out of the country, and Intouchables was everywhere.
That's so funny.
Everywhere you looked, there was a poster for two movies.
What year?
One of them was Intouchables 2011. Uh-huh. Intouchables and a movie called Hollywood, which is Hollywood without the D. And everywhere I looked was a poster for Hollywood, which also starred this guy that helped him get famous, Jamel Debbouze. I don't know. French culture is crazy. It's crazy. So like, I was just like, it was Hollywood everywhere. Hollywood and Intouchable. And I was like, I got to see these movies, but none of them were subtitled. I think I ended up seeing Contagion, actually. That's the movie I saw when I was there for the first
dark.
time. So, Intouchable, it made almost $500 million. Huge. So he becomes famous. He pretty much only stays famous in France.
Yeah.
He basically didn't even really speak English until after that, because then he became famous and they were like, oh, I want to be an international success. So we started learning English. He's done interviews about this. He was like, oh, I learned English immediately and blah, 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 blah. But then I couldn't believe this crossover. He gets an American Big Break, which is the movie Adam Jones, Lindsay. Speaking of a who?
I don't.
The Bradley Cooper movie, Adam Jones.
I don't remember the movie Adam Jones.
Member?
No.
Member? Because they changed
is
the name.
Is it Burnt?
What Bradley?
Is it Burnt?
It's Burnt.
He's in Burnt?
It's Burnt. He's in Burnt.
What is he in Burnt?
He's another one of the chefs.
Okay. Fuck, that sucks to get your big break in Burnt. Because that movie, although we love it, is a flop and a half. It's burnt as fuck.
But he's in the new Jurassic Park movies. He's been in the Transformers movies. He's doing really well internationally. Like I said, he's the French dub in Seoul. And he's also in this really funny children's show called Fish and Chips.
with his original comedy partner.
With his original guy. Yeah. And he's fish. And Fred is Chips. And Chips.
Fish and Chips.
Chips is a cat and he's a fish. Okay, and they're constantly fighting. Okay. I'll play a clip here because the voices.
Encore 59 minutes dans cette soupe visqueuse qui pue. Qui un bon fish.
Oh, fish a mordu à l'hameçon. Je savais bien que je le trouverais là.
Omar Sy apparently is really into this iconic French thief. His name is Arsène Lupin. Uh-huh. He's a, quote, gentleman thief. And he was created in the early 20th century. The reason I think, I'm going to connect this to The Great Gatsby.
Okay.
The reason the show is happening
now, because
The
Great Gatsby
era,
is out of copyright or whatever?
Yes. Arsène Lupin stories just went into the public domain in France a few years ago, just like The Great Gatsby just went into the public domain in the United States earlier this month.
We're going to get so much Great Gatsby shit. You have no idea. It's going to be fucking, we're going to have a show from Daisy's point of view. We're going to have a show from the other person's point of view. It's going to be nonsense.
The other person.
It's gonna be literally nonsense. I'm warning you.
It's already too much. Did you see the BNet, Brian's?
Yeah,
newsletter?
It's gonna be
all of the unauthorized. There's like a gay Great Gatsby. They're all over the place.
I'm just saying, if you have an idea for a Great Gatsby adaptation, now's
your moment.
The moment. If you can bang that shit out, it's your time to shine. So get ready. Because we're going to get like teen Great Gatsby. We're going to get geriatric Great Gatsby. We're going to get Great Gatsby performed by cats. It's going to be everything. Yes. Okay, sorry, continue.
Performed by cats. Performed by fish and
Cheeps. Fish and Cheeps.
Fish a mordu à l'hameçon.
So this character is this white guy, and he's this like fancy man thief.
Like these were books written in like 1905.
Early
or
20th century,
okay.
And they were serialized. It was back then where it was like, oh, they'd be in a magazine, and then Lupin. At some point they combine all of them into a book or whatever. Uh-huh. Lupin. Arsène Lupin. Uh-huh. And it's the same time as Arthur Conan Doyle is writing the Sherlock Holmes mystery.
Oh, drama.
Arthur Conan Doyle's brother-in-law created a gentleman thief character named like Raffles.
I love that it's like they're a thief, but they're a gentleman.
But they're a gentleman.
<It's> like, oh.
But which is coded white.
Yes.
Right.
Yes,
so totally. it's a thing, yes. That now he's black because he was always white until now.
Right.
I read this New York Times interview with him, and he said, let me find it. He says, it's about putting a new face on what it means to be French today. The archetype has changed. Anyway, so it's good. It's very meta because the books exist in the universe of this show. Whatever. We don't have to talk about the plot. I want to go into this next tangent that I got into when I fell into this hole. Because it came out around the same time as the Sherlock Holmes mysteries, at some point, the writer of Lupin, whose name is Maurice Leblanc.
Of course it is.
No relation, I checked.
Of course it is.
no relation,
Matthew
I checked.
Matthew Leblanc's great-great-great-grandfather. Just kidding.
He wrote a story in which Sherlock Holmes is trying to catch Arsène Lupin.
Oh, no.
So Arthur Conan Doyle was like, I'm going to fucking sue you. You can't do this.
Well, they're still litigious. Remember the Millie Bobby Brown lawsuit?
The Doyles love to sue.
The Doyles are genetically litigious. Like, even though Arthur is dead, they continue the legacy of suing.
And I'm like, oh, why are we talking about Netflix again? But like, this actually is interesting. And so, iconic Frenchman, he's like, fine, then I'll change the name. And he changed the name to Herlock Sholmes.
So it's the same character, but it's called Herlock Sholmes.
When the book was published, to go from the magazine serializations to the like novellas or whatever, yeah. Arsène Lupin versus Herlock Sholmes It's so weird. But before we move on, I was like, this is boring. We're just talking about this guy's career. There has to be something interesting. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to go to the Daily Mail, because if there's something super like titillating about this guy, it's going to be on the Daily Mail. He's married to the same woman for over a decade. He's kind of a snore when it comes boring. To personal life. But I was like, give me something in the Daily Mail. Give me one Daily Mail story, please. I need to make this guy like saucy for our purposes. Mm-hmm. And he has one appearance in the Daily Mail, Lindsay. This is the headline. 2012. In bed with Jessica Chastain, star plays the saxophone and cuddles up to a shirtless French actor in stunning new Vogue shoes.
Wait, and the photo is like very weird. They're in bed, or he's in bed, and she's sitting on the bed in pajamas, and she's playing the saxophone, but she's not playing the saxophone. She's holding it like in her mouth, and he's like touching it.
Touching
like,
the saxophone.
Oh, like this is what couples do. Photo. It's like they play saxophone together or something, but like.
And it's Vogue Germany. I'm just like, what
who,
is
like,
this?
Who directed this? Who like creatively directed this photo shoot? Because it literally makes no sense. He was shirtless French actor in 2012. Thanks, Daily Mail.
Okay, we can move on.
Hi, Lindsay, Bobby. So I've been doing a Lost rewatch. Or not rewatch, it's my first time watching it because it's the pandemic and nothing else to do. And I just realized, looking at the Lost Wikipedia, that I've been confusing Maggie Grace and Maggie Q, or rather I have been thinking Maggie Grace is Maggie Q for the past decade. And then that just made me think Maggie Q is more of a them than Maggie Grace, right? And then just watching Lost, this is a pretty hooey cast. Are there any thems in Lost? It feels like they're all whos that just were famous while Lost was on. All right. Crunch, crunch.
Okay. We get the Lost question a lot. Did anyone break out from Lost?
Should we start backwards? Yeah.
And like, it's kind of weird because I feel like people were so expecting all of these people to break out. Like, and they all kind of had like their own big moment. Not all of them. A bunch of them had their own big moments.
Like brief moments.
But like no one really did. Because like Matthew Fox was like almost a vintage when he was on Lost. He was like, oh, remember him from Party of Five, right? And he had this like new role, but didn't really like take it anywhere. You had like Evangeline Lilly, who might be the most successful of the Lost because she got into like the Marvel stuff. You have Josh Holloway, who had a moment and he was like on, okay, I don't remember. So maybe not. And then
he was in a Mission Impossible.
Jorge
Daniel
Garcia.
Daniel Dae Kim might be the closest.
Daniel Dae Kim might be the closest. He was on Hawaii Five-0 and like a few other things.
Forever.
Right?
Hawaii Five-0 was on.
It ran for 100 years.
Forever.
But it was it was another collective cast. It was another TV show. Like it didn't really feel like the next step up for any of these actors, you know? Mm-hmm. Even like Naveen Andrews, who was on a ton of different TV shows after this. I don't know. Terry O'Quinn was also on a bunch of TV shows after this. Like, I don't know. And none of them really like had a moment. Michelle Rodriguez, though, would be someone. Dominic Monaghan was in Lord of the Rings, but before this, right?
Before this, yeah. And right now, he's still better known for Lord of the Rings.
Ian Somerhalder was on Vampire Diaries for another 25 seasons, remains a who. I don't know. I'm really not.
The only them to come out of Lost was J.J. Abrams. Honestly, I think
truly,
that's it.
Truly, though. Truly, though.
I think
though.
That's it.
Truly, though. We're just talking about the main cast. There were some like there's some random people that, you know, fell into this show randomly that were like little bit parts. But it was just crazy to me that it was such a show that people were like, oh, this is the number one show. Everyone's watching it and like da da da. But I think it was such a collective that there wasn't like this standout moments for any of these actors to propel them, you know?
I mean, I think Michelle Rodriguez kind of counts, but
she kind of counts.
She was already
a thing.
Kind of a thing before. So maybe Evangeline Lilly and Daniel Dae Kim. But because they got big franchises after it.
Maggie Grace and Maggie Q, who's more of a who? They're literally the same in my mind.
They're close.
They're close.
They're really, really close.
They're close.
I would say Maggie Q gets a slight edge because of the types of stuff that she's in. Like, she's definitely in cooler stuff.
I would say she gets an edge because her name is more memorable, I guess.
Yeah. And, like, this caller thought that Maggie Grace was Maggie Q.
She has a high-profile romance. Wasn't she dating, like, Dylan McDermott for, like, a while?
Yeah. They dated for a long time. And then they broke up.
Yeah.
They have an interesting parallel, and I put this in the doc, because, like, they both have kind of like an action movie vibe, but yeah. Maggie Grace is iconically the damsel in distress because she's literally the thing that gets taken three times and Taken's one, really? Two, and three. And Maggie Q is like the action movie hero. Like cool. She's like the fighter, you know?
That's cool.
There's a cool action vibe. And I think even that makes you Themier.
Right.
Just by being like the heroine as opposed to like the damsel.
Yeah.
I don't know. Let's give it to Maggie Q.
Okay. We hooed them both. They're both hoos. Moving on.
Do you know what the Q stands for in Maggie Q?
Like Quigley.
Yeah.
I saw it earlier. Yeah. You weren't expecting me to know that, but I saw it like when I was looking this up.
Lindsay, what quince did you get when we got some quince promo?
I got sheets. Me too. I got beautiful sheets. Beautiful sheets.
Oh, wait. No, I didn't. I lied. I got a duvet cover. Same thing, though.
A friend of mine reached out and said, you know how you say on the quince ad that you have 365 days for returns? I once used that feature and it was incredible. It was so easy and great. And I said, wow, that's so nice to hear, because Quince offers free shipping and 365 day returns. And that's part of one of their many offerings, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14 karat gold jewelry.
Oh yeah, you're obsessed with the washable silk tops.
It's hard to, washing silk is a pain in the tush.
Not from Quince. Normally. And all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands because they partner directly with top factories that can cut the cost of the middleman and pass the savings right on to me, Lindsay, and you. And they only work with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. We love that. So indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/who for free shipping on your order. And as she said, 365-day returns. That's quince.com/who to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/who.
Hi, Lindsay and Bobby. I love you so much. Please talk about Frankie Jonas's chaotic TikTok content. Bye. Crunch, crunch.
Just when I thought that Frankie Grande was the most embarrassing sibling of famous people on TikTok, Frankie Jonas joined the platform and blew Frankie Grande out of the water. I don't know if you've seen the Frankie Jonas TikTok stuff, but it's kind of unavoidable. I don't want to be rude and call it cringe because I think he knows that he's being cringe. He like lives in New York now. He's fully grown up. He was the bonus Jonas, a.k.a. the fourth Jonas brother who is not in the Jonas Brothers band. There are four, not just three Jonas brothers, and he kind of has made that his entire shtick. But I guess, like, how can you not make that your shtick? Like, that's your shtick. So he's from Jersey, moved to New York. He lives in like Bushwick,
especially
or
when
something.
You can't leave the house,
right? And like, he joined TikTok, and now the joke that I think like all of TikTok is kind of in on and loves it is that, like, to them, Frankie is the most famous Jonas. So like, it is actually funny. Like, they'll post on, if Nick Jonas like posts a TikTok or whatever, I don't know if he even has one, but there was some place where he was on a TikTok and they were all posting like, oh, it's Frankie's brother. Oh, Frankie's brother has a TikTok? And it's
Frankie's
funny.
Brother.
It's funny because they're like standing the underdog. That's the joke, that Frankie is more famous to them. And I think it's confusing to a lot of people maybe our age who like the Jonas Brothers as kids and are like, what's with Gen Z and the Jonas Brothers? But like, I think the Jonas Brothers are cross-generational. I think they go all over the place. It's not just a nostalgic band. They also had a recent comeback, which kind of like helped fuel up the old stuff. But yeah, Frankie is like, you know, TikTok's new bad boy, I guess.
I've been so massively successful lately that I wanted to do something to help me stay grounded and remind me of the fans. So, Tanamanjalal? Sorry if I mispronounced your name. This one's for you. I hope it grows your account.
You're right. Like, every single one of his TikToks is cringy. He literally got Tana Mongeau's name tattooed on his leg for a bit.
He's like, I'm very much like, I'm a grown up now and I'm a little freaky. And that like plays well on this platform because it's like nostalgic and fun and young and cool. And he's in New York. And I think he posted a TikTok that was like, I live in New York now, like, want to be my friend? And it's like very personal, very relatable shit. He's doing a good job. It's cute, I guess.
And he looks like a Jonas. If you're wondering, like, oh, like, does he look like a Jonas?
No, he looks just like them. If TikTok is the underdog sibling to like Twitter or something, it's kind of like that's his place to shine, you know? Like, groaning at like the Frankie Grande and Frankie Jonas TikToks is kind of like part of the platform. It's kind of fun.
On the count of three, say the last name of who you think is whoiest. One, two, three.
Grande.
Jonas. Oh. Wow.
Okay, fine. Moving on.
Let's play a little Who Are Them.
Ken Jennings, Who Are Them? I am so lucky to be with you, keeping me so much at all.
Ken Jennings, Jeopardy superstar. 1, 2, 3.
Them?
Who?
There's so much shit about him recently, and he's like, he hosted the first Jeopardy after Alec Trebek died. Like, I think there's just like so much there.
Okay, I'll give it to him. You're okay. A them. Okay.
I don't know. Am I wrong? Okay. I don't know.
Hi. I just finished the first episode of Pretend to City by Fran Lebowitz and Francesco Scorsese's dad, Martin Scorsese. And I want to know, is Fran Lebowitz a who or a them? And I spent the whole first episode thinking that she was Linda Hunt, the Academy Award-winning actress. So with that, is Linda Hunt a who or a them? And do people confuse them often? Is this the first time? Let me know. Okay. Bye.
I don't think people confuse them often. I don't think people are really thinking about either of those women frequently enough to confuse them. I get it, I guess. I guess I get it.
But I don't, despite your weird mix-up, I do think Fran is a them and Linda's a who.
Yeah, I mean, Linda's definitely a who. Linda's definitely a who.
Like, your mix-up is like, you have a very special brain, you know?
We love your brain
so
much for
we
mixing up
brain,
Linda Hunt and Fran Lebowitz.
It really is a special brain.
I think Fran's tough, though. I think she's got a name. It's like a cultural commentator, writer, Fran Lebowitz. We know she's been around for so long. But I'm like, is that also niche? I don't know. I don't know.
I'm saying them. You can disagree.
You know what? We're going to have to disagree on a couple of these today. I say Fran Lebowitz is a who.
Wow. Okay, fine. But like, agree to disagree.
Oh, now I'm thinking about Fran being told about the concept of who's or thems and then talking about it in this show. Here's the thing about who's or thems.
If Fran
back in 1983, back in 1983, I was talking to Andy Warhol. And we were talking about 15 minutes.
This is your impression of Fran Lebowitz?
I understand what they're doing there. It's derivative. And
it is derivative. It's so derivative. If she called us derivative, my heart
explode.
Would stop.
No,
it'd be so true, and I would be just die. Oh, that'd
it's
be
derivative.
Iconic.
I don't know who Rita Ora is, and quite frankly, I have a problem with people who do. Next call, she's on.
And I'm Francesca Scorsese's dad, just being like, ah!
Everything you say, ah! Speaking of Bridgerton, okay. I'm coming!
Okay. Oh my God, stop. How dare you say come on the main feed.
Hi, Lindsay, Bobby. Good Sunday morning. I am listening to the pod. I had to stop because you mentioned New Year's Eve in New Orleans. Anyway, instead of Lucy Hale this year, we got Big Frida. So that made me wonder, is she a who yet? I know that Big Frida was in a couple of videos. I think she may have appeared in Drake's video or Beyonce's video. I think both, actually. She's definitely a New Orleans them, huge them. But has she crossed over? It's a national who. Okay, thanks. Love you guys. Crunch, crunch, crunch.
Big Frida. Who are them?
Definitely a New Orleans them. I agree with the caller, but I don't know if... I think who?
Let's do 1, 2, 3. Who?
Who? Because they're always a feature on stuff or big stuff or whatever. And I know, like, in bounce culture, it's like they're the top. But in terms of, like, you know, breaking through, like, it's still kind of... I think a lot of people are kind of stealing their sound too without.
Yeah.
That's a big thing without credit.
And especially just her voice just being somewhere. Like, remember when Formation came out?
Yeah.
And then, like, suddenly you hear Big Frida and everyone's like, it felt like such a big moment.
Yeah.
Can we say voice them? I don't know if that's even fair. That's why I'm almost willing to say that Big Frida is a them because the voice is so iconic and it's kind of increasingly everywhere.
Right. It's true because the sound, her sound is popular, being popularized. But I think some of it is her credit gets left off in a lot of places because, again, a lot of the work is kind of like more derivative of bounce than actually including Big Frida.
So maybe it's like she should be a them, but right now she is a who, and that's the larger conversation.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, well then I guess Big Frida who. Next call, last call. No, two more, last call.
What's the deal with Lazy Boy? Like the chair brand, Lazy Boy. I just saw a commercial for them on Hulu, and I haven't thought about them in ages, but then I remember, like, we had a chair, like, growing up that my mom would just call, like, oh, the Lazy Boy. And then I feel like I've heard other people call just, like, generally, like, reclining chairs, you know, usually that kind of, like, velvety material. I don't know, in my experience with my one, is it like a Kleenex effect, like where you call all tissues just like a Kleenex, you know, and like all bandages are Band-Aids in, you know, in the lexicon? Is it like that, but for like reclining velvety chairs? Because in this commercial, it looked like they were also selling couches. So do they do more than that? Is that just, like, what they're famous for? Or is that, like, did they, like, invent that kind of chair? You know? Like, I don't know what I'm saying. Okay. Man, cuisine. Bye-bye.
Just to let you know, this caller called back. I cannot play the second part of this call. That's going to be a call. You're doing amazing, sweetie. Lazy Boy, Who Are Them? Part 2.mp3 is coming at the end of this episode because, yes, this caller called again.
There, more what is there talking left to about say? What lazy is there left boys. To even say about the Lazy Boy?
Yes, the Lazy Boy inventors designed a chair that can, like, recline and then non-recline.
Yes,
and now everyone does it.
The Lazy Boy style chair, I think, is like majorly now ripped off, and just like every chair that like is like, you know, has the little ottoman flip up from the chair is we call a Lazy Boy by just like default, even though the brand is Lazy Boy.
I was reading their history, and at one point it says that they invented it and they had a contest to name it, and Lazy Boy won. And I'm just like, do you think they were like, oh God, we have to call it Lazy Boy because it won this contest because the name is so bad?
So
I mean, it's a good name, but it's embarrassing.
It's not even spelled lazy. It's Lazy Boy.
Like LAZ-Boy.
Yeah. They couldn't put the Y before the Z or else it'd be confusing because Lazy is spelled with a Y and there's no Y after.
You know what their tagline is? It's very Jimmy Buffettian.
Love that.
Live life comfortably.
I love that. That's the live, laugh, love for people who truly love themselves.
Lazy Boy, Who Are Them? 1, 2, 3, them.
Them? Yeah.
I think so. We had a Lazy Boy. We still have a Lazy Boy. It's in my parents' house to this day.
Really?
It's the love seat Lazy Boy where each side independently reclines.
Oh no.
We've had it my whole life.
Like, my parents don't have a Lazy Boy, but they have a Lazy Boy chair. Like a chair that is a Lazy Boy style.
A Lazy Boy type. A Lazy Boy type. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like,
this one's the real deal, Lindsay.
And the thing.
Ooh, and you look on the, you flip up the little like dust cover thingy and it says Lazy Boy.
Lazy
right?
Boy.
Stitched in there. Ooh, and you know you're looking at the real deal.
Okay, wow. Amazing. What a flex.
No skimping in the finger family. We go for the real Lazy Boy.
I bet that thing is worth at least $1,000 with inflation, you know?
I feel like Lazy Boys depreciate pretty quickly.
Oh, they're
it's a
like
sturdy
cars.
Chair, though.
40% when you take them off the lot. Your Lazy Boy loses value.
I always forget that the one side, only one side is like a sturdy stick because you reach into the side and you like yank up the recliner.
Okay.
But on one side, if you sit down and you kind of hit your head on the backrest, it just pops because it's loose.
So you're saying
one side of the Lazy Boy kind of sucks.
Okay, yeah. Great.
Okay, it doesn't stick. You're like, whoop, I didn't mean to go flop, but okay, last.
Okay, no, I think we should end there.
No, we're done?
Yeah.
So you don't want to know if the inventors of DNA are the discoverers of DNA or whose are them? So wow, Watson and Crick.
I don't want to know. I don't.
If you want to call in, Call 619-WHO-THEM. Leave your questions, comments, and concerns. We may answer them in a future episode. Support us on patreon.com/WHOweekly for twice weekly bonus episodes and a newsletter with our recommendations and, you know, all kinds of fun things. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. We love that. And have a good weekend. We'll see you on Tuesday with another episode of The Main Show. Bye.
Bye-bye.
People can do hard things.
Hey, sorry to call again. I'm the lazy boy caller. I realize I never actually made it, like, WHO related. I just had the instinct to call you upon realizing this. So I guess, like, if it is, like, you know, a Kleenex effect kind of thing, like, does that make lazy boy a them? Or are they like a WHO because, like, general, like, I don't know, that name just seems kind of WHO-y to me. That was my attempt at connecting this to the theme of the show. I'm just really curious now. Like, this is going to be stuck in my brain all night. Oh, that's okay. Crunch, crunch. Bye.
Hi, Bobby Lindsay. In response to the Siskel and Ebert, is that what their names are? On this week's call-in episode, I've literally never heard of that. I'm 21 years old, and I don't think I know anyone who has ever said anything about Siskel and Ebert. That sounds like a foreign language to me. They're like Nas to me. Like, I had no idea they even existed. They're not even WHOs. Sorry to say that you're old. This is a stupid call, Leanne Cuisine.
Hi, Lindsay Bobby. Long time. So I just had to pause the podcast after you talked about Siskel and Ebert and brought up Roper. And I just wanted to confirm that Richard Roper does suck. I think he is one of the worst film critics in Chicago as somebody who lives in Chicago. And if you need further proof of that, he gave Hillbilly Elegy 4 stars out of 4 stars. So he is definitely out of touch, and yeah, he's just bad. You do not have to play this. Okay, Leanne Cuisine.
Mystic Barbara Walters Clark. Mystic Gwen Eichel Clark. Mystic Katie Curry Clark. Mystic Diane Sawyer Clark. Mystic Connie Chung Clark. Mystic Jing Polly Clark. Mystic Oprah Winfrey Clark. Mystic Joy Behar Clark. Mystic Crunch Crunch Clark.
Ben Yabox was at the official wrap of the last day of filming of Keeping Up with the Kardashians ever.
Hyundai? Crunch Crunch.